Let's just continue the conversation, Hokie, as if nobody's listening. I think what's going to happen the second half is that, and I don't think this is like, a bad thing or like saying the Steelers are going to fall apart or anything. They're not, I don't think. I think it's very reasonable they're going to win one of every two games. Look at little two-game segments. At Washington, Ravens, split. Two road games in Ohio, split. Cleveland at Philly, split. At Baltimore, Kansas City, split. Therefore, I think they're going to go into the final game at Cincinnati with 3, 4, 5, 6 loss. They'll be 10-6. So they'll have a chance to go 10-7.
So they'll have secured a playoff spot. I would think 10-6.
I think that's
very reasonable. And now they're playing for a home, a home playoff game, or planning to go on the road.
And Cincy will probably be playing for a playoff spot.
Yeah, which is going to make it. That's why they have to be determined. They don't know when it's going to be yet.
Right.
Last week of the season, they don't know what time.
Could be the game of the week.
It could be game of the week. And I think you're right. I think the Bengals, if Joe Burrow can stay hot, they are always a second half of the season kind of team.
Does that sound reasonable to you?
I think it does sound reasonable. I really, as I've looked at this in the last couple days, I thought, my goodness, you're on a death march here. I mean, you are facing a lot of tough teams. You're playing your division, which to me, I know we played the division well. I think we didn't sweep them last year. We only had one loss, but I think we swept them. And then you have division games. You have the Commanders, 6-2. You have the Chiefs, who are the Chiefs, and then the Eagles. Those are tough games.
Yes.
Division, Chiefs.
Yes, that's why I'm saying.
I'm telling
just
you.
Split them. Split them until the last one. And then you have a chance to go for 11 wins.
This is where you're going to see what kind of team we really have. Right? We're going to see now who the Steelers really are. I mean, you play against... I mean, let's be honest. You're not talking before this. I mean, great Falcons. They beat a Falcons team that's good now, but wasn't very good. Come at the right time, week one. Week two, the Broncos were a developing team. I think they're pretty good now. They're 5-3, I believe.
Yeah, they're
going
a playoff
going
team
into,
right
going
now.
Going into Baltimore.
Yeah.
Going into Baltimore this week. And then you have the Chargers, who were banged up. They're 4-3, but they're banged up when we play the Steelers. Then they lose two tough ones against the Colts away, Cowboys at home. Dak threw all over them through that. They're at the end, won the game. Then they play against really three below-the-line teams.
Yeah,
Raiders, Jets, Giants, and so right now, really, with what we've seen, they are where they should be, 6-2 going into this tough stretch, this brutal stretch over the next 9 weeks.
Well, let me ask you this: I didn't think I would start here, but the more I think about the second half of the schedule, it's weird because I don't know if a lot of people feel this way. I do. I'm less worried at this point about the offense than the defense. The defense has good numbers, scoring defense, they're very good. I thought they got a little lucky against the Giants. There have been times at home lately where they've been pushed around and they haven't faced the quarterbacks that they're going to face here. They got Daniels, Jackson, Burrow.
I agree.
Hurts, Mahomes. I'm
much
worried
better,
about the defense.
Much better quarterbacks the last nine games.
And some star running backs.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't agree with you. They've been pushed around. I don't think they were pushed around on Monday night, even though they gave up, 150 yards rushing?
Out-schemed then, or what do you think?
I just think it was like popcorn. I think that one play, there was a guy that wasn't in his gap. The next play, there wasn't a guy in his gap. I don't think it was more of guys being pushed around.
Yeah.
I think guys can improve. There are players on this defense that need to get off blocks a little quicker and make plays. But it was interesting, that touchdown run. By Tyrone, number 29, he ran. Deshaun Elliott, I don't know where he was floating, and he still stepped up. And he was a C gap player on the play side. That was his play, and he wasn't there. And there's Michael Myers just walking into the building. Michael Myers scares me every time I see him.
Do you like horror movies?
I don't either.
But
it was more of a popcorn, right? You had a play where Patrick Queen could have been in his gap. Another play where. Landon Roberts, didn't get over the top, or Patrick Wilson. So it wasn't like it was one person that stood out every play. It's just guys that here, random guy there, not getting his gap.
Yeah. Now, I've read, and I don't know how you feel about Pro Football Focus, where Larry Ogunjobi's play has slipped, that he's not having a great year. Agree or disagree?
I don't agree, and I don't disagree. Let me tell you why. He's not making the big splash plays. You're used to Ogunjobi. And I've talked about this in the past. Ogunjobi will have a tackle for a loss. He'll have a sack, and then he'll get tangled up, and he'll get tied up for half a game, and he'll come out and make another tackle for a loss, right? And he's not making those splash plays right now. And so that's why they're saying he's not having a great year. I don't think he's having a bad year. I don't see him getting knocked off the ball. Mm. I don't see him getting destroyed. I just don't see him making those kind of splash plays that we're used to seeing from him.
Give Patrick Queen a grade, and if you would, put it on a curve based on what you expected. What's his grade so far?
I would say that, you know, it depends what kind of offense, it depends what kind of plays. If you're running right at Patrick Queen, he struggles at times, right? He's not a big guy. So if you expect him to take on a lineman and shed a block and make a play, that's not what he does. That's not his game, right? And so that's where he struggles. Where he thrives is when he's able to flow and run to the ball. You saw him make a great play on a dump pass to a running back,
yeah,
right? Or you see like a toss play and he comes flying down the line. That's where Patrick Queen thrives. He's not a guy that you'll expect him to take on a lineman and shed him, make plays at the line of scrimmage. That's just not him. That's a Landon Roberts. Landon Roberts does that. He's a tough dude, man, and you watch him making play after play at the line of scrimmage. So I think that you know what you're getting with Patrick Queen, and that's why I think you're seeing sometimes the Steelers give up some runs is because people are running between the tackles on him. And you're seeing that sometimes those plays are getting knocked off or they can't get off blocks, and they're getting 4, 5, 6 yards rather than 1, 2, 3 yards.
Here's a question for you, Hokie. And Chris Hoke, 2-time Super Bowl champion, brought to you by McVay Plumbing and Heating. And I'm going to be a little all over the place.
Okay.
This is my third cup of coffee, and this one feels powerful. With Dunkin' Donuts flavoring, I might add, and a cinnamon sugar donut to go with it.
Wow, look at you.
Yeah.
NIL deal with them or what? Do you have an NIL deal?
I should, actually. I should. This is going to be a long-winded question, okay. Hokie, so sure. Bear with me, because okay. I've been talking about this a lot. You know Guy Montecalvo?
No.
Used to play at Penn State. Coached at Washington High. Was a great high school coach. He would always text me in recent years about the Steelers' lack of play action and what play action can do for you. In fact, I'm going to find his quote for you. I've become fascinated with this also because of Peyton Manning on the Manning Cast.
Yeah.
Talking about
Is entertaining.
Great. And I want to be
really
entertained.
I like watching that.
Me too.
I like it.
I love it. Talking about what play action can do to a defense and how he used to have a camera trained on him in practice and they showed it. He obviously went back and went to the Colts and said, hey, get me my practice tape. And he said, there's an art to this. To the play action by a quarterback where you need to make it look exactly to a T the way that it would for a run or for a pass.
You're not supposed to be able to tell the difference.
Yes.
So what you're doing, you're trying to get the linebackers to suck up so it opens up spots and soft spots in your defense.
Yes.
And so Peyton Manning was really good at that because Peyton Manning was just an attention to detail kind of guy.
Yes.
Go on with what you're saying, though.
Yeah. No, that's basically it. But also, the Mannings and Belichick were marveling at how good Russell Wilson is at this. Tomlin poo-pooed it a little bit last week. I got the feeling that people are trying to compare Wilson to Fields, and he just doesn't want to like say bad things about Fields, even indirectly. But, Hokie, this is an art. And lastly, I'll tell you this. I saw Bobby Knight, now the late Bobby Knight, 5 years ago at a coaching clinic at Duquesne. I was coaching my girls, I don't know, fourth grade basketball team. He said the most underrated thing and a forgotten thing in basketball coaching is fakes. Simple.
Ball fake.
Ball fake, pass fake, shot fake.
I used to watch James Worthy when I was in California give the little head fake underneath and go up and make an uncontested layup.
Yes.
No question.
So tell me, that's a long-winded way of saying, what is it like, how important is it, and what's it like as a defense dealing with a guy who is a master of play action?
Well, as a D lineman, I really didn't matter to me, right? I played my key. I played what I saw in front of me, right? My lineman played pass and he stood up. I played pass. My lineman fired off the ball. I played. So me, I'm not reading the quarterback. I'm reading really my lineman in front of me. What it does is to the linebacker, right? It does the safety. You know, if you're running the football, and Coach Tomlin, I think what he said a couple weeks ago was play action doesn't matter if you can't run the football, right?
Yeah.
And so if you're not running the football, I mean, Peyton Manning's always had a good running game. Think about the running backs he played with, right? He had really good running backs throughout his career. And so if you can run the football, now you have that linebacker believing that it could be a run. If you can't run the football, the linebacker is going to slow play it. So if you come back and you fake the handoff and it looks exactly the same way as it does when you're gonna hand it off, you're going to suck up that linebacker and all these crossing routes, these quick slants. you know, you fake the handoff, you turn around, boom, boom, you have a quick slant out of the slot, you're going like Santonio Holmes used to go for six. Mm. Remember those?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he would take that ball and he would, I mean, if he got tackled, you were surprised. And that's what you get. And I think what's happening with the Steelers, the reason why the play action is working so well right now is because they're running the ball well. And Najee Harris, I think he's running the ball the last month better than we've ever seen him run.
Why?
Because he
number
looks,
one reason why.
I think the number one reason why, his vision. His vision. He's seeing the holes. We've always complained. Everybody's complained who follows Najee Harris over the last, what, 4 or 5 years since he's been here, that Najee Harris runs in the back of his lineman. He's not seeing the holes. This last game, go back and watch the film. How many times did he cut back to the backside and he went for good yardage?
May I add to that with a question?
Yeah.
Isn't part of having vision having a little bit of space in which to exercise your vision? And doesn't the threat, now finally, the threat where a defense has to say they may go over the top, take more guys out of the box and present him with more opportunities to display vision?
Well, I think that, but let me tell you why I really believe the vision is there. Because he's not trying to avoid tacklers in the backfield. Very rarely now. I mean, it's happening, but not at the clip that we're used to seeing where there's guys in the backfield and he's having to make somebody miss a yard after he gets the handoff.
So you're saying there's not as many people in the backfield?
Not as often.
Yeah.
Not as often.
Why is that?
I think the guy's doing a better job of blocking. I think that everybody's kind of coming together. You're starting to see blockers. You're seeing the edge guys, the receivers, and the tight ends do a little bit better blocking. You get these long runs when the receivers are blocking downfield. If the receivers aren't blocking downfield, then he's got to get in the second, third level, and he's got to make guys miss. Now he's able to get to the second level at times without anybody there.
Yeah.
And he's able to accelerate. And so I think there's a lot of things that are coming on, but it starts at the line of scrimmage, and then when he comes to the line of scrimmage, he is seeing that cutback lane. And that's where there's been all the complaint. We talked about this earlier in the year where Patterson had a lot of success earlier in the year running the football. The game he got hurt.
Yeah.
Right? Jalen Warren, a lot of his success comes from cutting the ball back. Najee Harris couldn't cut the ball back. He's doing that now, and he's showing the ability to put his foot in the ground and accelerate at a rate that we haven't seen since he's been here. So I this is very encouraging.
Yes.
And you're going to get Zach Frazier back, right? I think Mason McCormick's playing really, really well. Broderick Jones, if he could play better, right, I think that this can come together, and this could make this defense very scary to play against. I mean, offense, very scary to play against.
Limits, do you have a question for the esteemed Dr. Hokenstein?
I do. Chris, from a defensive line perspective, when I expected Dexter Lawrence...
Wait, he can't hear you. He doesn't have headphones.
Oh, he doesn't have headphones.
On. Go ahead, ask me and I'll ask him. It'll make for great radio.
So, I expected Dexter Lawrence to have a pretty big impact on the game, and he did in the running game, but not so much in terms of rushing the passer. And basically my question is, in terms of Ryan McCollum, Mason McCormick, two very young guys, how would you approach it from a defensive line perspective? Because Lawrence wasn't able to get a lot of pressure on Wilson.
I was hoping for a shorter question than that, but that's okay.
Because Dexter Lawrence didn't get sacks doesn't mean he didn't have an impact on the passing. I mean, he was getting pressure up the middle. Now, listen, this is one of the best defensive tackles in the game. And so he was the reason why Burns had a sack. He was the reason why Ojori had a sack. So I mean, he was getting pressure up the middle and making Russ Wilson move in the pocket. There was one sack that he missed. So I wouldn't say that he wasn't having the impact. And listen, you play 60 plays. You look at T.J. Watt. T.J. Watt, he rushes the passer, 35, 40 times in a game? And because they're trying to block him, they're trying to do the same thing to Lawrence, not let him impact the game. But if you can get pressure on the quarterback 5, 6 times in a game and get a sack or two, that's a good game. By all accounts, I think Dexter Lawrence had a much more impact on the passing game than you're giving him credit for. Listen, you just got to get in his way and try to do the best you can. I saw him one time just absolutely annihilate McCollum. McCollum did a good job. I'm not saying he didn't, but I'm saying one time, I mean, he just literally just threw him on his back and rushed Wilson. I wouldn't say he didn't have a sack in this game, but I wouldn't say he didn't have an impact on the game.
Is that a satisfactory answer, Limits?
It is. Yeah, he was definitely really good in the run game. Like watching Jalen Warren run into Dexter Lawrence, where the difference is like foot.
I wanted to ask you that.
Pounds.
Yes, that was funny on that play. As a connoisseur of nose tackles and a man who played nose tackle, started for a 15-1 team. I might add at tackle.
Yep.
I don't know that I've seen many like Dexter Lawrence. Like, if you could pluck every nose tackle in history out of their prime, Is he one of the most freakish athletes at that position you've ever seen?
Well, he's a freakish athlete. I mean, he can move and he's a big guy. I think a lot of those guys, I think Casey Hampton can move. He was athletic, right? Until his knees started to fall apart and he got older. But when he was young, he was athletic. And that's what makes a really, really good defensive lineman is you're athletic, you're able to move on your feet, you're able to dance a little bit, and be able to squeeze through holes that even a little guy can't squeeze through. And so that he's absolutely athletic in that way.
Who would be your number one pick? You're starting a team, you pick a nose tackle. Who's the number one pick of all time for
Hokie? I'll tell you who was an absolute beast.
Ted Washington?
No, he was good. What was his name? The guy that played for the Chargers, the big nose tackle that we played against a bunch. I remember Jeff Hardings was a really good center. I saw him toss Jeff Hardings a few times. He was a really good nose tackle for the Chargers back in the early 2000s, mid 2000s. Haloti Ngata was tough too.
Jamal Williams.
He was tough. Now listen,
is that who you're talking about?
He's not a household name, but go back and watch his film. Sucker was tough. I mean, you go back and watch Haloti Ngata. These are guys. Haloti Ngata was crazy good, right?
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of nose tackles. There are some that get bigger names than others, right? If you talk about Jerry Ball, Coach Mitch, one of my favorite guys of all time, he would always talk about Jerry Ball. He coached Jerry Ball.
He was a hell of a ball player.
He was.
I'm sorry, Hokie. That's
okay.
The coffee talking.
But you remember when he would play? I mean, he was so tied up on that center. There's a lot of good nose tackles, but the reality is it's guys that are very big and big and strong.
Yeah.
And athletic.
But most guys aren't this big. This guy's Ted Washington big.
Yeah.
This guy's.
What about Vince Wilfork?
Oh, yes.
He was big.
And athletic.
Yeah.
Hokie, the only thing we'd be talking about today is if the Giants made a play late in the game with Highsmith and Watt on the sidelines. Now, those guys empty the tank. I'm not blaming them, but I watched a game the day before where Lamar's trying to come down the field on the Browns and Stefanski's calling timeouts to get his pass rushers rest. Don't you have to do that? How do you live with yourself if they score with Watt and Highsmith on the bench?
That shows you, not in that, they had Loudermilk in there. They're backups at D-tackles, too. Loudermilk was the one who flushed Daniel Jones out of the pocket on that play, right? When he had to throw off his back foot and he overthrew, I think it was Singletary, the running back, and that's when Beanie Bishop was able to catch that ball. Listen, that's when you have to have this believe in your backups, right?
Call timeout?
It depends on the moment, but I think there was still time left in the game, right? And so what if they went down and scored? Now what? You got to have time. So I think you're thinking ahead. I think Coach Tomlin's always thinking ahead in those moments. But you got to believe in who you have. You got to believe in those guys. I mean, T.J. Watt comes out quite a bit in a game. I mean, if you more than most.
Yeah, if it was one of the two, I'd be like, all right, yeah, backup. Got to believe in him, but if I'm Tomlin and I see both those dudes on the sidelines, I 42 seconds left
without her being either. And I'm trying to remember. I remember the left tackle. I'm not sure if Cam was playing right tackle or not on that play. But so you're playing with one of your four starters. But that's when it comes into you're only as good as your 53rd guy. And you got to believe in that. I mean, you don't have the greatest player in the world right now, T.J. Watt, out there, but other guys have been able to get the job done and have proven that, and he went with it, and it worked out.
What'd you think of the Pickens play? I mean, it's a rule. He didn't have both feet. Is that a good rule, I guess, is the question.
Well, are we going to follow the rule book, or are we not going to follow the rule? I mean, I guess we can argue it. He got his right foot down twice.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's insane. It's crazy that I didn't realize, because I was at the game. I was sitting up in the club seats.
Yeah.
I didn't realize at the time. I thought that the ball was moving, and they said that he didn't make the catch until both his feet were off the ground. I didn't even realize until I got home and rewatched the game the next day that his left foot didn't even touch the ground. That's incrinculent.
It is incrinculent.
You know, I mean.
I've never seen it.
Never. Never. And it's just bad luck. Just bad luck. I mean.
You couldn't hear that. We had forget it. Just move on.
I didn't hear that.
No, it's okay. It was Jolie.
I mean, you give that catch to him. There was another catch that was taken off the board early in the game because of Broderick Jones' face mask. I think this offense played much better than the scoreboard showed. There were a couple touchdown passes that were taken off the board. I mean, again, the Giants had the same thing.
Broderick Jones taking a lot of criticism. Is it justified?
I think, let me ask you this question. I'll answer it with a question. When Dan Moore Jr., he got a bad rap around here. He wasn't good enough. He's not a franchise left tackle because he had a missed block here or there. He had a bad penalty here and there. it wasn't as many times as Broderick Jones. Why is he getting so much grace, but Dan Moore Jr. never got any grace? Because he's a first-round draft pick. Think about that for a minute. Dan Moore Jr.
I don't think he's getting grace. That's the thing.
Broderick Jones, but you hear people saying, but he hasn't started a full season yet. But there's all these buts. I'm tired of buts.
A lot of buts.
Yeah, no buts, no coconuts, right? I mean, that's the reality is this, is that when Dan Moore Jr. was a young fella, a young player, he wasn't given the latitude that Broderick Jones is given right now. He didn't give up a sack and a tackle for loss in the same series and then not get, you know, and then say, oh, but he hasn't started a whole season yet. It was, we better go out and draft a first-round draft pick.
It might be, and you interact with people a lot on Bob's show, that you and I are having a different experience, because my anecdotal experience is that Broderick Jones is getting crushed.
Well, listen, is he getting crushed every single play? No.
No. He's getting crushed
in the media
with criticism.
Oh, sure.
Fans
and it's justified.
Yeah.
But people then on the same breath are saying, but he hasn't played a whole season yet, but he has potential, but we moved up in the draft to get him. So they're giving him all these buts. Dan Moore Jr. is one of the, you know, he is a bona fide left tackle in the NFL.
Speaking of good nose tackles, who was Butts for the Redskins all those years? Who was their Daniel Butts?
I don't remember.
Remember him? City Limits?
No, well, I remember Jake Butt, the tight end from Michigan.
but that's my thing with Broderick Jones. He just got to continue to work. And sometimes, you know, you watch it and he has a really good play. I just want to see him finish plays.
Yeah.
I want to see him finish. Stay on
your
block.
Well, yeah, like I said this yesterday, and I used your quote from last week on that. Being young and all that, I can live with mistakes, but it's the aggression. Why is that seemingly lacking?
I'm not sure. But if you watch the film, everybody say, how can Hokie question? I'm not questioning, you know, his integrity. I'm not questioning him as a man. I'm just saying, you know, when you watch the film, even when you're at the game, you feel it. Fans are yelling and screaming about it.
Yeah.
It's not finishing plays. It seems like there's too many times when he's turning around and watching his guy run to the ball.
Yeah.
And he's jumping in the air sometimes hoping his guy doesn't make the play. And it's just, you know, a lot of times if you just stay on your block, good things will happen. Just finish the play. Play to the whistle. And we're not seeing that every play from him.
Dave Butts was his name. 6'7", 290.
Hokie. Nose tackle.
Defensive. I don't know. Yeah,
that's a defensive end kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
6'7", 290. Who's the biggest human being you ever shared a locker room with?
Well, I didn't share a locker room with Villanueva, but he was a big boy, right? I mean, I know him. Look at Darnell Washington. Look how big he is. I mean,
Daniel McCullers.
Yeah, he was a big, big man. I tell you, Daniel McCullers.
Max Starks.
I call him Big Grizzly. Max Starks was big.
Yeah.
Big. Was he? Max 6'8"?
6'8", yes.
Yeah. Max is probably one of the biggest guys I've played against.
Who's the
biggest guy I played against? Orlando Brown. Zeus.
He yelled at me in the Ravens locker room.
I'll tell you what. I remember one time, it was like one of my first starts. My first season I was starting in the NFL, and we were playing the Ravens, and he was playing the right tackle. That's when he had Jonathan Ogden, one of the biggest men I've ever played against, either two at left tackle.
Yeah.
And we're sitting in a huddle during the commercial timeout, and I'm sitting there, and I see Zeus over there on my left. He's playing right tackle. We're lined up. We're on our huddle, and he's like foaming at the mouth. He's like a dog. He wants to kill somebody, right? He's sitting there, and he's smacking his arms, and he's shaking. That was my first season starting. I didn't even want to look at him. It scared me to death looking at the guy. He was so huge. This guy was 6'8", 350 pounds, and maybe had very, very little. He was all muscle. And I was like, dude, I'm glad I'm over the center, not over this sucker. Because he was a tough dude.
Who's the biggest crap talker you ever played against?
You know what? A lot of those crap talkers are on defense. You know,
really?
a lot of our best talkers on my team when I was there were.
Any quarterbacks who yapped a lot?
Not really. Not really.
Really?
Not at us. I mean,
about Brady?
Brady yelled a lot at his team.
He did?
Oh, yeah. He would yell at his guys. I'll tell you what. There were times in games. You go back and watch those games. There were times in those games where we would be beating them pretty good in that first quarter, or we would slow them down, and Brady would be all over. You would see him in the huddle just berating them and yelling at them. And they would come out, and they would respond, and they'd start moving the ball. I mean, they responded so well to him. He was a great leader. But I there weren't a lot of guys that talk trash offensively. Think about it. The guys on my team, the team that I played on, you know, for the Steelers over the years, talkers, Joey Porter, defense, right? Larry Foote, defense. You know, these guys are talkers that I think of. Lethal Flowers.
Yes.
Right. I remember when I was a young guy that came in, you know, he was trash. These were defensive guys that talk. I didn't know many on the offensive line, and that's who I would be able
to. Were you in the game when Joey Porter went on the Ravens bus after the game?
Oh, yeah, I was there. I remember when he woke the sleeping giant. What was his name? Todd.
Todd Heap.
Todd Heap.
And he hit Todd Heap.
When Todd Heap was hurt.
Yes.
And everybody's like, dude, like, and then that's when Zeus got all fired up, right? And
Zeus is a guy you didn't want to be fired up or give him extra motivation.
I think the only guy that wouldn't mind meeting him in a dark alley would be James Harrison.
Were you on the field when James Harrison body slammed the Cleveland fan?
I was on the field. I wasn't in the game, but he wasn't in the game either. I was on the field, yeah. I remember that. That was insane. James Harrison just had a no-nonsense mentality, and Coach Coward loved that about him.
When did you notice the guy was on the field?
I think we all kind of saw it, but it's like everything. Everybody kind of sits there and thinks security is going to get it, and here comes James. It's kind of taking him in bodies. It was awesome. That guy had a really bad Christmas. He had a really bad Christmas.
I'll say. I wish someone had done that to that idiotic Yankee fan the other night who grabbed Mookie Betts' arm.
How about that?
And they would have been justified.
Well, that guy's been expelled.
Pull him out of the crowd.
Hasn't he been expelled from any yes. baseball game forever?
Yeah. You would have been.
That's as bad as it gets.
Any player would have been justified pulling him out of the crowd and giving him the James
Harrison. How about this one? How about Gronk saying, I went to school with that guy?
What?
Yep.
Gronk was.
He did?
Rob Gronkowski was watching. He was there watching it, and he goes, oh my gosh, I know that guy. I went to school with that guy. And he said, that guy was, that's the kind of guy he was. And if I'd say anybody would do that, it would be him.
That is great.
Said it didn't surprise him at all. Watch that guy have a podcast in a week, probably.
Which guy? The first guy or the second guy?
The
first guy. Not the guy that held his right arm.
Yeah.
It was the guy that grabbed the glove and opened the glove.
I missed that. That is incredible. All right, Hokie. Let's take a look ahead to the second half of the season. 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township. Celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. The injury report brought to you by Shendrovich, Shendrovich & Fishman. I saw where Nick Herbig. Hopeful. He'll be back. Zach Frazier, too, once the Steelers get back from the bye in Washington. Shendrovich, Shendrovich & Fishman, they've got your back, not your wallet. Chris Hokin to the top of the hour, and who knows, maybe a little bit past that. Hokie, if you were a defense preparing to face these Steelers or looking at tape of them so far, what is the single biggest way that Russell Wilson has made them different from what they were with Justin Fields?
Deep ball.
I would say the deep ball. I think he's doing a good job of throwing the ball, but I think I saw something where he's 5 for 7 on balls over 20 yards.
Mm.
And he's throwing the ball up in the air in a way that allows people to go up and get the ball. And if you watch, and I think some of the times people say, where'd that ball? Why'd he throw that ball away? Or why'd he throw that guy ball behind him? If you go back and watch the tape, he sees the field, man. And I've been actually pleasantly surprised. You know, coming from Seattle and Denver, and you know he was a great quarterback, Hall of Fame type quarterback, but we never really watched him. And so you come here and you see Justin Fields, and Coach Tomlin went out on a limb to bring him back on the field. There are a lot of people. He said I was a lone ranger.
Yeah.
Right. There was a lot of people that didn't want to put Russ Wilson out. They wanted to keep riding with Justin Fields, but the reality is, man, is the deep ball has been so impressive. His ability to this nice soft touch on the balls. He's dumped these balls where Justin Fields, you know, a lot of the times where he got himself in trouble was when he would throw just beeline balls, right? Straight line balls. He's putting the ball up in the air, and that makes it very difficult for defenders because he's putting it up in the air and where places where only receivers can catch it.
Well, there was one to Scotty Miller that I thought was actually catchable. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think that ball was catchable. I think it was tough. I think you could have let him a little more, Starkey.
Yeah.
I remember exactly that play, watching it. I went back and watched it twice and reviewed it. It was a little short. It could have been out a little further.
So when you think about it, he was 20 of 28. Think about what that night would have been if Broderick doesn't have a face mask.
Sure.
If Pickens gets 2 feet down.
Sure.
If Najee doesn't drop a ball. If Miller comes down with this guy was bordering on a perfect
Najee,
night.
I think Najee had a linebacker right there. I mean, there was a guy a few yards away from him. So I would take that. When you're talking about the one of Najee at the beginning of the third quarter, drop the ball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll
give you the Scotty Miller one. I'll give you the GP one, right? George Pickens.
Two.
And let me tell you something. And here's the reality was – yeah, that ball, you know, I'm splitting hairs here, right? I mean, he could have been another yard out in front of him. I think it could have been an opportunity for a catch. It was a little short, and it went through the DB's hands.
Which one are we talking?
The ball to Scotty Miller.
Scotty, yeah.
It went through the DB's hands.
Yeah.
The DB had his hands above Scotty Miller's hands, and he just wasn't able to close on it, if you go back and look at it. So, but the balls, the deep ball is huge. mean, how about that ball that was thrown to GP late in the game in cover two?
Oh,
just
my God.
Just a perfect throw.
One of the best throws of the year.
Perfect throw. Perfect. Well, only he could catch it. And so you look at throws like that allow the Steelers' offense to open up, and now it's going to open up the game for Najee Harris. Is going to be we talk about the scary next nine games, but there's teams looking at the Steelers going, this is a different team.
Yeah.
This is a different team. With that element of Russell Wilson out there playing, this is a different type of offense that we're really going to have to prepare for.
What stands out about the rest of the league, if there's any storyline about Washington, as you look ahead to them? They're as surprising as any team to me at 6-2.
They got a quarterback.
Yeah.
This is a quarterback-driven sport. There's no question about it. If you got a quarterback, you're going to win. If you don't have a quarterback, you're not going to win. You know, we'll win game here or there. But the reality is Jalen Daniels comes in, he plays good football, right? And it looks like the Commanders are going to be a good team for a long time now if he stays healthy. And that's the thing is you look at the Steelers, I mean, the last couple of years since Ben retired, we just haven't really had a top-level quarterback. And so it's tough to win when your quarterback's 50-50, and you just don't know what you're going to get every Sunday. Mm. And so that's the difference here with this Steelers team, and that's the difference with the Commanders who we're going to face in 2 weeks.
Hokey, you're an unbelievable man. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. So are you.
Happy Halloween.
You know that after this week, we're going to start singing Christmas carols. How about that? They're already putting Christmas stuff in like Target and
yeah.
Walmart and Sam's Club.
That reminds me, we're planning.
Are you putting together a Christmas album?
A Malzy themed Christmas album.
Okay.
Where Bob is going to join in. Donnie Football is going
to
do.
Bob, I listened to you last week.
Yeah.
Bob's not singing. It's you singing.
No. Bob sings better than me. Listen to him.
But he's not going to sing on the radio.
Oh, he does. And he'll sing on this album. Listen to Bob if you can. Play it for Hokie. The Rick Springfield thing. Listen to the passion here, Hokie. You don't get that kind of passion everywhere.
That's serious passion. I don't know if he's on tune, but it's good passion.
And Donnie Football's going to do a dramatic reading of "Twas the Night Before Christmas," a la Dick LeBeau, except this one will be the night before Malzy.
Wow.
And then lots of things, you know. Up on a house.
You might be able to sell tickets down at the in the cultural district.
I think we will.
You have everybody come just watch you.
Malzy the snowman was a very friendly soul. You're not going to be watching horror movies. Tonight,
no, Mike Myers. Have you seen that video? It's like on social media with the guy who puts on a Michael Myers mask.
No.
And he drives down the road and he'll be at a stoplight, red light, and somebody in the passenger seat's filming him from the side.
Yeah.
And he'll turn and look at the person parked next to him at the light.
See that. Yeah,
and they
see that.
Freak out. Yeah. They start screaming, right. And it's so funny. It's so funny. He just turns and looks at him, and these people freak out. Would you freak out?
Yes.
What if you came out of your house one day to get the mail, and you saw him standing next to a tree?
Not good.
Staring at you.
City Dweller, are you a horror movie guy?
No, not at all. I don't like horror movies.
Michael Myers. Yeah,
all
man.
Three of us, then.
He's the scariest one.
Yeah.
Scary. Freddy Krueger was not really believable.
There are ones I will watch. I think The Shining with Jack Nicholson is a great movie.
Great one.
But I don't. When it gets to the point of like the first one was that I ever saw was The Exorcist, and I'll never forget it. Where
I won't
turns
watch
her head all the way
I
around.
I won't watch the ones.
Why would you watch that?
That
The Conjuring is the first one I saw. It was terrible. I was in like eighth grade at a friend's house. It was terrible. Yeah.
I know it ruins everything.
But when Michael Myers is like, it's like realistic. You look out your window and he's sitting there staring at you.
Yeah, not good.
That could happen.
Your favorite candy, Hokey?
You know my favorite candy. I love those Reese's peanut butter cups.
Yeah, those are
good. Little small little ones in the gold pack wrapping, right?
Yeah.
I used to love going out and people giving me like a full size.
Wasn't it great when your kids were of trick-or-treating age?
You'd bring it home, yeah. And the thing was, they'd come and throw it all out and we would have to start giving it away.
Yeah.
I remember when I played for the Steelers, Coach Mitch, I'd bring it and put it in our candy jar because we had so much candy from all the kids.
Yeah.
That I'd put it in a bag and give it to Mitch and then we'd fill up our candy jar in the defensive line room.
I love it. Have a great rest of the day.
You too, brother. See you next week.
All right. That's Chris Hoke.